This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, Renee Martin and Robin Dow are producing today as Hurricane Francine approaches Baton Rouge in Louisiana, and we will be talking about that as we move along this morning. We'll spend some time on other topics, and in a few moments we'll hear from the ranking conservative commentator Quinn Hillier, as last night Kamala Harris and Donald Trump debated. But as we wait for the arrival of Francine, I've lived in Baton Rouge now since my college years, more than 45 years, and the two biggest hurricanes to hit Baton Rouge, ironically not Katrina, but it was Andrew in 92 and in 2008 Gustav. They did the most damage to Baton Rouge, and Gustav, which was a terrible, terrible hurricane for this area, was a Category 2, as is Francine expected to be. Right now it's a high 1, expected to reach 2, so you never know until it happens. It could be a non-event or a huge event, but there is a historical context to this. Hurricane Andrew was in 1992, a presidential election year. Gustav was in 2008, 16 years later, a presidential election year, and now 16 years removed from 08, we're at 2024, and here comes Francine. So let's hope and pray for the best, and later in the hour we will be talking more about this. And as always, we invite your participation at 877-217-5757. Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, this from the Associated Press, showcased starkly different visions for the country on abortion, immigration, American democracy. They met for the first time and perhaps their only debate before the November 5th presidential election, now 55 days away. The Democratic vice president tried to get under the skin of the Republican former president, provoking him with reminders about the 2020 election loss that he still denies, and delivering derisive asides at his other claims. Harris's needling prompted Trump to launch into the sort of freewheeling personal attacks and digressions from which his advisors and supporters have tried to steer him away. The early read is that Harris won the debate, but does it really matter? Well, according to the Vegas odds, which Real Clear Politics follows, Harris yesterday was behind, and today, based on the odds of her winning the election, this is not a poll of voters, but of her winning, she's now 5 points ahead of Donald Trump. So the early read is that she did well. Now, Quinn Hillier doesn't like either one of these candidates, and we know he doesn't like Donald Trump. Hasn't liked him since he spoke at Ladd Peebles Stadium in 2015 when he opened his campaign, where Quinn lives in Mobile, Alabama. But will this be a pivotal moment in the campaign, or is this just a blip on the radar as we approach November 5th? Quinn Hillier, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim, and I hope you and everybody there stays safe. I'm a little bit east of you, and I should be okay, but I'm worried about all my friends in my home state of Louisiana, so be careful.
Well, thank you. And there is certain, as we talk a bit about the hurricane, Walker Percy, I thought, put it in perspective. He said, hurricanes bring out the best in people. We treat each other a lot more kindly. We're in all of this together, and right now we're hoping and praying that there will not be a cataclysmic disaster, but there will be high winds, there will be some flooding, and precautions are certainly necessary. Fortunately, this one is expected to move through quickly, so whatever damage is done will probably be done within a few hours, and the time in which that is likely to happen is this afternoon, early evening, and perhaps a little beyond that. But let's hope for the best. But Quinn, was it a storm of sorts last night? I know that you had told me you might not even watch it, but what do you think of whether this really makes a difference as we decide for whom to vote? And of course, both candidates are courting independent voters and those who have not made up their minds.
Well, first of all, no, I refused to watch it. I didn't want my blood pressure to go up. My blood pressure, as it was, went up enough just by following it on Twitter while editing the things that that younger writers at the Washington Examiner were writing that I needed to edit, and just following that way made my blood pressure go up a little, I think. Will it matter? I think it might matter. I don't think it is decisive from what I, again, this is not from actually watching and listening, but from watching the reactions in real time and obviously following the coverage of who said what. And I did have the TV on mute way in the background, so every once in a while I got a glimpse of what they looked like. The reason this matters is because there are a lot of people out there who really don't like Trump that sort of think that his results were okay, but they still don't want to vote for him, but they're really unsure about Kamala Harris, and they might go back to Trump if he showed any sign of human growth, of human, you know, of finally getting what it is about himself that turns everybody off. Instead, he was the same old, if not worse than the same old Donald Trump. And so he gave people that are sort of wavering like that, maybe in his favor, he gave them no reason to end up voting for him. None whatsoever. And I've been saying for months and months, the decider in this election isn't going to be between who goes back and forth between voting for Trump or voting for Harris. It's going to be who goes back and forth between voting for one of those candidates or not voting at all or casting a write-in. In other words, it's the third party / write-in / no voters that are going to make the difference. And Trump needs to get a lot of those people that otherwise would be not, you know, would not vote. He didn't get them last night, and that puts him behind the eight ball. That's a long explanation, but mm-hmm. I hope it makes sense.
877-217-5757 for Quinn Hillier, who's worked both in the inside of political campaigns and from a journalistic perspective, where he now resides as a ranking conservative commentator, native of New Orleans, but lives in Mobile, where he has resided for some time. And a listener asked, good question, Holly in the Garden District, whether the Taylor Swift endorsement of Harris after the debate may ultimately mean more than what happened during the debate.
I don't know that it means more than what happened during the debate, but there's clearly a segment of the population, this being a hero worshiping population and a celebrity besotted civilization now, there's a part of the population that to whom that will make a difference. And especially in Pennsylvania, the key swing state, which is where she is from, you know, there are a lot of younger voters that, for whatever reason, think that the so-called wisdom from a pop star, should help them decide who to vote for president. I don't think it should, but I think, you know, at the margins it might.
877-217-5757 for Quinn Hillier. We will take a call or two or a few if you're so inclined. And I know people are in hurricane mode, but right now it's actually not bad. But we know that's about to change, and we will be talking a bit more about this as we move along. But Jeff Greenfield, who, like Quinn, has been around the political world for a long time, says Harris knew the points she wanted to hit. She hit them. She did so well that Trump folks might have suspected a hidden teleprompter had been smuggled in. She repeatedly talked about her plans to lower the cost of housing, give tax relief to new parents, and, oh, did you hear that she won't ban fracking and owns a gun? And he goes on to say, Harris did herself a world of good. Trump confirmed the most serious doubts of anyone not firmly in his corner. But the third conclusion is yet to be determined. If Trump does not suffer any political damage from this debate, it means he is even more invulnerable to the traditional ebb and flow of politics than we have imagined. Now, he has defied the odds. He is the most unconventional candidate in the history of the country, and he has won once and lost once, and this one's up for grabs. How do you see the election 55 days out?
I see it as still very, very much up in the air for exactly the reasons Jeff Greenfield just gave, and also because, frankly, you have two candidates that are really, really not fit for office, and Kamala Harris really is the most radical candidate, no matter what she now says about fracking, et cetera. She's the most radical candidate that's ever been nominated on the left. And Trump is a walking time bomb. And a lot of voters know that. Everywhere I go, people say, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so this could go either way, and I'm not about to make a prediction.
Jennifer and Tara, let's slide you in before the break. Jennifer, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello?
Yes.
I just have a comment. Quinn Hilliard just disrespected a woman who is an astute businesswoman. She's not a pop tart.
Oh, he corrected himself. He said pop star. But anyway, hold tight. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And right now we're talking a bit more about the showdown last night and how the election is unfolding with 55 days remaining between now and Election Day between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And Jennifer and Tara, we lost you during the break. I think you may have hung up. But Quinn, I know you didn't call her a Pop-Tart, but she thought you did.
Well, I actually, that's what I said, but that's pretty easy to say, to make a verbal slip, and that's why I immediately corrected and said pop star. And, pop tart, pop star sort of sound alike, and it's an easy, I was just talking fast. But that said, no, I do not have much respect. Obviously, I don't have much respect for Taylor Swift. I think she's a lot of what is bad about pop culture, but that's not what we're here to talk about, and so let's move on.
Well, maybe Trump will get Beyonce's endorsement.
Oh, gosh forbid. I mean, anyway.
877-217-5757. Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with Quinn. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Mr. Hilliard, I heard your comment about Taylor Swift. But you also said that Kamala Harris is the most radical candidate that has been nominated for president, as I understood it. I want to ask you, as a conservative commentator, what's your idea of a perfect candidate as well as a perfect America?
All right. What about, I think he said the most radical candidate from the left. And
I
remember in 1980 when we thought Ronald Reagan was the most radical candidate from the right, and now even some liberals give Reagan his due. But please continue. The question was toward you, not me, Quinn.
Right. Well, I do think, and I've written numerous columns explaining, I mean, for the last, 5 years explaining why she's so radical, and I do urge you to Google my name and hers. But the question was, what's the perfect candidate? The perfect candidate, I mean, there's nobody perfect, but it's the best candidate I've ever seen, and the best president I've seen in my lifetime is indeed Ronald Reagan. In fact, I urge everybody to go see the Reagan movie that's out right now. It's a solid B-plus movie, good entertainment, and well worth watching. I think he was a man who was very sincere. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. He went out and he accomplished what he said he was going to do. The world is better off because the Soviet Union collapsed, and it didn't collapse on its own. He pushed it.
And he was the guy Jimmy Carter wanted to run against, and look what happened. Sometimes in politics, people make miscalculations, but Reagan was a giant. There is no doubt about that, and he still has a place in American culture, and he's been gone now. Think about it. He left office in 1989, more than 35 years. He's been dead now for 20 years, but people are still buzzing about Ronald Wilson Reagan. James in Metairie. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Well, hi. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Hilliard. Well, today's the big day. Expecting some really, really bad weather down here.
Good luck to you, James.
No, well, thank you, Chip. No surprise. Trump is claiming the debate was rigged. The moderators, it was a 3-1 against him. But This is a very alarming quote, Jim, if you'll allow me. Very short. He says, ABC is a news organization. They have to be licensed to do it. Quote, they ought to take away their license for the way they did that. That those are the words of a fascist authoritarian dictator.
Well, Quinn didn't watch it, but I did. And I thought they went out of their way to allow him to rebut to the point where he got about 60% of the actual words said during the debate. But
he
didn't acquit himself well. But he's people. I hate to use sports analogies, but Quinn, it's almost like rooting for a team, and people who have voted for him twice, they're invested in him. That they want him to do well. They voted for him twice. They don't want to admit they made a mistake, so he's probably going to get their votes a third time, and that's a big portion of the electorate. So he could still win this election. For those who say it's over, I wouldn't count on it being over just yet. It shapes up as a very close race based on what I see, Quinn.
It does shape up as a very close race, which is what I said earlier. Before the debate, if you had held a gun in my head and said you have to predict it right or you die, I would have said, well, in that case, I'd predict a very, very narrow win for Trump. After the debate, I would now say I predict a very, very narrow win for Kamala Harris. But I also said I'm not actually issuing any predictions because it's so close and nobody does have a gun in my head, thank goodness.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Quinn. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think I would remind you about the catastrophic war that was declared this date and for 9/11 and that attack. And then the Bush administration lied our country into a war.
All right. Well, that's really not particularly relevant to the debate last night, but today is a major anniversary, and thanks for bringing it up, Phil. 23 years ago today, America was attacked, and that changed the fabric of this country. And you never know. Politics is a chain, as the late, great Raymond Strother said. And you know what happened on September 11th, 2001 certainly affected what happened in 04 and 08. And if Obama's not elected, then Trump's not elected. And it's amazing how things often, we don't know the implications until years later on something that may have happened 20 years ago. Quinn?
Jim, that's very well put. I also want to say about the previous caller, I also forgot to respond to his original example, which was Trump's call for revoking the license of ABC. That is exactly the sort of anti-constitutional idiocy, actually danger, that makes Trump such a terrible choice as president. And the caller is absolutely right. That is inexcusable for Trump to have said. Now, I do have to respond that nobody lied us into war. There's a difference between a lie and a mistake. And George W. Bush and every other person that looked at the intelligence thought that there were weapons of mass destruction, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a lie if you don't intend it, although it might have been a mistake.
And
I do want to say on this 23rd anniversary of 9/11, again, our hearts go out to everybody affected, which means basically every one of us.
Yep. Jason in Jones Creek. Jason, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Jim and Quint. The question I wanted to hear him answer, Trump answer, which he's evaded from two debates now in 3.5 years, is January 6th. How is it not just more of an issue just in front of the debate, in front of this whole situation?
All right. January 6th, he continues to say was not his fault. He blames it on Nancy Pelosi, and there are people who believe what he says, no matter what he says, Quinn.
And he is lying. He's lying through his teeth. Every single thing related to January 6th, including everything that he did that led up to it and everything related to it in its aftermath, every single bit of it that Donald Trump says is a lie and always has been a lie. And it was a terrible attack on the Constitution itself and is absolutely unforgivable.
But yet he has basically crafted the Republican Party in his image until further notice. I'm sure that gives you great distress.
Gives me extreme distress, as I think listeners can hear in my voice.
Well, Quinn, thank you, and good luck to you, and hopefully this time tomorrow when we are on the air, as we always are during major catastrophes. This will not be a major catastrophe, but if it is, there's a pretty good chance we'll be with you. So, Quinn, thanks for joining us. Always a
good luck to everybody, and stay safe, and thanks for having me on, but stay safe.
You too. And we'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. What could be the only debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump took place last night in Philadelphia, and it was just over an hour and a half in duration. Started with a moment that perhaps will be shaped for years to come as far as how it affected the initial meeting between Harris and Trump. They'd never met each other, and she walked across the stage, shook his hand, Kamala Harris, and Trump barely looked at her and did not look at her for the rest of the night as he responded forcefully to her interrogation. And, of course, he landed a lot of blows that were predictable. Some were legitimate and others were illegitimate. And the basic contention by Trump that he won the 2020 election, of course, has been debunked time and time again, but he continues to say he did, and he lost by 7 million votes in the overall vote count. And Joe Biden got more than 3 million, excuse me, he got more than 300 electoral votes, and it takes 270 to win. And by Trump's measurement, that's a landslide. But for those who missed the showdown, Renee Martin's pulled up a sampling of how it went between Trump and Harris last night.
Donald Trump left us the worst unemployment since the Great Depression. Donald Trump left us the worst public health epidemic in a century. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom.
People don't go to her rallies. There's no reason to go. And the people that do go, she's busing them in and paying them to be there. She has a plan to confiscate everybody's gun.
President Trump,
Tim Walz and I are both gun owners. We're not taking anybody's guns away. So stop with the continuous lying about this stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, all I can say is I read where she was not black, that she put out. And I'll say that. And then I read that she was black.
I mean, honestly, I think it's a tragedy that we have someone who wants to be president who has consistently, over the course of his career, attempted to use race to divide the American people.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
You talk about extreme.
There is no state in
this country. All right, there we go. That's how it went last night. And we'll be talking more about that perhaps later in this hour, but certainly in the days to come. But right now we do have a storm, a bad moon rising over Baton Rouge and South Louisiana. And Bill Jackman, Louisiana Radio Network forecaster, is with us, a meteorologist. And good morning to you, Bill.
And good morning, Jim.
How's it looking?
Well, you know, we've had worse storms here in Louisiana, certainly, and not to make this not something to worry about. It is something to worry about, but there's some good news, and I like to kind of do a positive spin, so it's not a lot of panic and people running around. It's good to be informed when we get hurricanes coming in, as you know. Thing with Francine is that she is a Category 1 storm. That's not minimal. That's not something not to pay attention to. The winds 90 miles per hour right now, Jim, and we do have a Hurricane Hunter plane that's going to be giving us some information, might have it before we disengage this morning, the latest information, but I expect the winds to possibly be approaching 100 miles an hour with higher gusts before landfall. But the good thing about Francine is that she's on the move. It's moving at a good 12 to 15 miles an hour, and that's a pretty good forward speed for a hurricane. And once she moves and makes landfall, moves over, she's going to weaken rapidly. The big problem with these storms always, as you know, is rainfall. We could see 5 to 9 inches of rain. But the good news, again, is that that is lower than what it could be if the storm stalled and kind of spun out over us. So it's going to be on the move coming across. Right now, I kind of was doing some calculations looking at the satellite and radar, and looks as though landfall would be between 5:30 and 7:30. I know it's a big window, but I want to tell you it's evening time. And that around sunset is when landfall is going to happen. And it will come across, the storm will come just east or just over Marsh Island and then just west of Morgan City and go right between Baton Rouge and New Orleans as it continues toward Mississippi at that northeast, you know, pace. Storm surge, getting a lot of emails and questions about that. Well, the storm surge, this is going to be something positive as well. Storm surge will be 4 to 8 feet. That we'll have to deal with. But the good news, Jim, it's not high astronomical tides. And the tide was high this morning at 4:27, going to be high again at 4:13 tomorrow morning. So we'll be coming out of a low tide, heading into a high right between when Francine makes landfall. So again, you know, things could certainly be worse. So we should be thankful for some of these positives that are happening with the storm and when it's coming in.
And Bill, you say it's going to, based on current tracking, likely go right between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, meaning neither of the major cities in Louisiana is expected to take a direct hit. Is that accurate?
That is. Now, New Orleans is going to be on the worst side of the storm. You don't want to really be on the east-northeast quadrant of any tropical system. And with the way the path looks like it's going right now, the good news, again, is Baton Rouge is going to be on the west-northwest quadrant. Not that that's wonderful, but it certainly is better than where New Orleans is going to be on the east and northeast side. That is where you can get some tornadoes. You can get the worst winds. So no direct hit. The eye of the storm should pass between both cities as it heads up toward Mississippi and then continues on toward the Tennessee Valley.
I remarked this morning that Gustav, which was the worst storm to hit Baton Rouge in the last half century, worse than Katrina as far as Baton Rouge goes, it was a Category 2 when it made landfall, and yet it still caused cataclysmic damage. But that was more of a direct hit kind of situation, wasn't it?
Yes, and the storm was a little bit larger in geographical senses than what Francine. Francine is kind of pulling herself together, strengthening. The good news, of course, is it's going to make landfall before it gets too much stronger, but it has gone over very warm ocean waters in the Gulf over the last 12 hours or so, and that's why the winds are up to close to 100. But you're right. Even though it's a Category 1 or 2, the direct hit, the path, the duration of the storm, all of that has a huge influence at the end result of what the damage is. So, again, I don't want to belittle the storm and underplay it at all. It's a dangerous storm. You have to seek a place of safety, get to high ground, do all the precautions, but it's not something that we look back in the history books and see a category, you know, 3, 4, or 5, or a storm that's going to just stall out over, let's say, the Delta region, which would be catastrophic to have that much rainfall for, you know, a day or so. That could be just something I couldn't even have a word to explain. So good that she's moving, but again, something we have to put up with. And again, if you're anywhere, let's say New Orleans on eastward, northeastward, that's the side of the storm that's going to be more intense than we have on the western side, which would be, you know, here in Baton Rouge and on north and west.
Now, you say landfall perhaps as soon as 5:30, but what does that mean as far as the time it reaches the state capital?
Yeah, I would say that we're looking at having the storm weaken probably by the time it moves over. It's going to be a tropical storm. I believe it's going to lose its hurricane characteristics pretty quickly. There might be hurricane gusts when it moves over, but We're looking at the weakening to happen. And that time will be somewhere around, in the best calculation I can do now based on the latest satellite and that I'm doing, looking where the eye is, I would say that timing is going to be 11:30 to 12:30, 1 o'clock, something like that.
All right, so we're talking midnight or so.
Right.
But by this time tomorrow, how should it be?
Well, by this time tomorrow, it'll be out of our state. It'll be in Mississippi. It'll be just forecast to be just a tropical depression, so there won't be the damaging winds that are going to happen when it makes landfall again this evening. That's going to be the worst time with the winds. The rain would be in the overnight period, and then we're looking at Mississippi up toward Tennessee, Arkansas, right along the border. It kind of stalling out literally for 12 or 15 hours and raining itself out. So we're going to hear about the tremendous rainfall in Arkansas, let's say Tennessee, northern Mississippi, as the storm comes to a complete halt and then kind of rains itself out to our north.
Well, it's a given there will be some power outages. That's yes. A given. What about flooding?
Yeah, flooding, coastal flooding, again, if you're in an area that is typical, we don't have the high astronomical tides, but expect, and I'm going to be a little more pessimistic, say 4 to 9 or 4 to 10 inches or 10 feet should be the storm surge. And then rainfall, you're going to have poor drainage areas, of course. There's no threat with the water and the winds for the levees at all. I don't see any threat for that happening. Those should hold up quite well. So we're just going to be looking at the roadways, you know, picking up water, or the smaller streams, and you know, going to bank full pretty quickly, because we've had quite a bit of rain in the last 12 hours, which really wasn't directly related at all to Francine. That had nothing to do with her directly. It was just the frontal system in the Gulf that was throwing that rain our way. But because we've had the rain, additional rain certainly won't take too much to cause that poor drainage and low-lying flooding.
And we still have some hurricane season to go.
Well, yes, you said that very well. There's a lot of disturbances that are out in the Atlantic right now. Not necessarily that they're going to be, you know, heading for the Gulf or Louisiana or anywhere specifically. They're way out in the Atlantic. But again, we have a couple of disturbances in a prime spot out toward the Cape Verde Islands that make a run at the U.S. usually. One will probably be a named storm in the next couple of days, and then there could be one following about 4 days later. So we're at the peak hurricane season now, so we can expect a lot of activity to start picking up.
Well, thank you, Bill Jackman. We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you're listening to Talk Louisiana, and we're pleased now to have the Associate Athletic Director for Louisiana State University, Taylor Jacobs, who's in charge of the new world of NIL, Name, Image, Likeness, and Strategic Initiatives. This is where the world turns in college athletics, particularly in football, which we know is ongoing right now, and the biggest brand in the state of Louisiana is LSU football, and Taylor Jacobs is in her 10th year in the department and the third as the Associate AD of NIL. And good morning to you, Taylor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, you have made the rounds and talked about how the world has changed, but how substantial has that change been?
I mean, I would say it's been pretty substantial. We've seen significant opportunity for our student athletes and significant impact just across the student athlete experience in general. You know, I think in a world in which we used to talk about facilities and academic services and all of that support that we would provide student athletes, now NIL plays a huge role in that.
And you actually go out and try to help athletes find these patrons, people who will help them in their endeavors and, of course, reward them for being great athletes. Is that something you're comfortable with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, NILSU as a whole and LSU in general, we're trying to better the student-athlete experience. And like I said, NIL is a big part of that. So it's not just about getting the deals, right? You know, we are educating them. We're providing resources. We want to make sure that all the athletes feel comfortable in the space. A big part of our networking push or of our education push is networking. And so that means interacting with businesses, whether you're just going to build a relationship for your time to do NIL deals, or you're going to try to build those long-lasting relationships that you could take with you after you complete your eligibility. that's something that we always talk to our student athletes about. And so going out and finding those opportunities is a piece of what we do, but definitely something that we are getting more comfortable with now that we're 3 years in. And again, like I said, it's just a small piece because the education is still a big component.
We're hearing the voice of Taylor Jacobs, Associate AD at LSU and charge of NILSU. And this is a new world, and of course LSU is, as we know, uniquely situated when it comes to competition because of its facilities, its tradition, and its record. But this is a world in which everybody's adjusting. How is LSU doing as far as competing with its brothers and sisters on this level?
You know, at the beginning of NIL, our administration, our senior staff said, just like everything else we do, we want to be the best in this space. And, you know, July 1st of 2021, we ran a billboard in Times Square talking about NILSU being the real deal. And so to some extent, we had to live up to that, right? And we, from the very beginning, have made it a goal to make sure we were providing enough education and resources. And I feel like LSU has done a great job at being a leader in this space.
Taylor, you, of course, were trained at Auburn and came to LSU, and this wasn't even on the horizon, but you know what it's like in a big-time athletic department. Is this now the major endeavor?
I definitely think it has become one of the major talking points, yes. It is still extremely important to focus on, you know, the holistic approach that an athletic department takes in the student athlete experience as far as academics and mental health resources and strength and conditioning. And we're not pushing any of that aside. Our goal is to be great in everything that we do, but NIL is definitely a major talking point. So now it's our responsibility to be great in that area as well.
Amazon is releasing a new documentary called The Money Game, featuring some prominent LSU athletes, some of who, of course, moved on. Jaden Daniels, Libby Dunn, who's still at Tigertown, Angel Reese, Flo-J Johnson. Are you pleased with the way this new environment was captured?
Yeah, I'm really excited for the fans to see The Money Game. I'm actually in New York right now as we have some press this week leading up to the premiere and launch tomorrow, but we're really excited for fans to see more than just what they read on the headlines. You know, this is The Money Game gives people the opportunity to see all of the work that the student athletes really do put into their NIL endeavors, and they're working really hard at it, and we're really proud of everything that they're doing, and we're excited that this documentary is going to showcase that. And you'll also get a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, my side of things and the education and kind of what we're doing from the athletic department side. But just seeing what the student athletes now are adding to their plates and how they're navigating it, it'll be cool to see.
What's the biggest obstacle?
Man, that's a loaded question, I feel. I think it's just that it's ever changing. You know, we always have to be prepared for anything to drop at any moment because there's just so much changing in the NIL space, whether it be legislation from the NCAA or state laws or just in general how an athletic department is operating. We have to be thinking on our feet and ready to pivot at any moment. So the unknown is the biggest obstacle.
Does LSU anticipate, Taylor, that this will be tweaked, that the world we're in now may look differently a few years from now?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still learning a lot about NIL. You know, we're 3 years in and we've done a lot in 3 years, but I think there's still a lot to learn about it. So I definitely think that that means there's room for change, room for growth, room for more opportunity. And so we, like I said, are just going to be ready for whatever comes our way.
You speak as a student athlete who was a stellar tennis player at Auburn. You know what it's like from the athlete's perspective. Has the environment for a college athlete improved as a result of the fact that athletes can now be compensated openly?
You know, to be honest, I think it depends on who you're talking to. I think some people love it, and some people have found amazing opportunity in NIL. And then I think they're also learning that it's a really big time commitment. And being a part of these marketing campaigns and influencer marketing deals, it's almost like a job. And so they're having to choose, do they want to take the time and participate in that, or do they want to take a step back and not participate in NIL and really focus on school and sport? And we want them to make that decision because we obviously want the athletes to be comfortable with the time they're putting in. But at the end of the day, if they choose to engage, we're going to support them and try to help make it easier. So I think it's dependent upon who you talk to, but I think overall the NIL opportunities have brought a lot of positive to the student athlete experience.
We're wrapping up our discussion with Taylor Jacobs, Associate AD of NILSU. And not only are athletes now capable of being compensated, and in some cases quite lucratively, but they can also leave. And some people believe the transfer portal has been a bigger challenge than actually finding ways for players to be paid for their worth. Your thoughts?
You know, the transfer portal, big talking point for sure. Again, I think at the end of the day, before NIL, after NIL, the transfer portal was still going to be there regardless of NIL. And an institution would still have to ensure that an athlete was enjoying their experience and all the way across the board, right? They want to feel supported. They want to enjoy their time on the field, on the court. They want to enjoy their time in the classroom. And so just continuing to provide that space where our athletes feel supported, that's the best that we can do. And yeah, it definitely adds challenges, but at the end of the day, you know, we want to make LSU a place where our student athletes feel happy and supported.
Now, you're a native of Dallas and competed at Auburn and then worked in the fine athletic department at Auburn University. When did LSU first become part of your horizon?
Let's see. I moved to Baton Rouge in 2014. And I actually, my husband moved to Baton Rouge first. And so then we made the decision at the end of the day that I would come to Baton Rouge, and things worked out. I had some connections in the athletic department from my time at Auburn, and, you know, I had to put in a little bit of volunteering time, which is what I always tell our student athletes. Don't be afraid to put in some volunteer hours if you need it. But it worked out, and I'm extremely thankful for the opportunities that I've had at LSU.
Well, we're pleased things are going well for you, and certainly this is a new world, and thanks for sharing your perspective, Taylor Jacobs.
Thank you so much.
And as we round the corner and head for home, LSU's a 6.5-point favorite Saturday over South Carolina in the SEC opener for the Tigers, and this is an important game for Brian Kelly, who lost in the opener, an upset win by USC, three losses to start opening seasons, or the first three seasons of Kelly at Tigertown, and now five in a row for the Tigers, and then a lackluster performance against Nichols. So we shall see what happens against the other USC. Francine is headed toward the Louisiana coast. It's expected to make landfall as a Category 1 hurricane, perhaps reaching low Category 2 status. It will bring life-threatening storm surges, hurricane-force winds from this afternoon. And as Bill Jackman said, we must keep our guard up, even though we're expected to not have the same kind of cataclysmic results of, say, Gustav or Andrew or Katrina, but you never know. Francine is likely to make landfall between Avery Island and Houma between 4 and 8 today. Tonight should be an interesting night for Baton Rouge, but the storm is moving fast, and as a result, it should get through here quickly. But it will leave a path of some destruction, and there will be numerous power outages. And tomorrow morning at this time, there will be trees down, and roads may be a bit hazardous, but the show will go on. I'm reasonably confident we'll be with you tomorrow, and we'll have relatively good news to report. Let's hope and pray that is the case, and we thank you for joining us, and we're glad that those of you are listening are most likely in your homes today, not in your cars. But until tomorrow, for Robin Dow and Renee Martin, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay safe, stay tuned.